Welcome to the Pastor and Intern Podcast. My name is Eric. I'm the pastor on this podcast, and I'm here with the intern, Will Emery. How you doing, Will?
I'm great.
You're doing great?
I am doing great.
Good. It's good to hear.
I am. I'm doing great.
We've had a good couple days.
I mean, sort of.
Okay, well, let me correct myself. I've had a good couple days.
Okay, there you go.
My parents were in town.
Good.
I met a pretty dynamite missionary.
Yeah, she was pretty solid. And her husband was really nice, too. And Shout out to them.
Yeah, they were great. And we had the gathering, and
it went higher than expectations. Well.
And shut up.
If anything,
you have just lower expectations.
If anything just works at the gathering, it goes higher than expectations.
Something always goes wrong. But you know what? It's something different every time. And as long as it's not the same thing
That's true.
We're doing our job.
We are.
So there you go.
We're doing okay.
All right, Will, you've got something that you want to
start
out with.
So we're going to start off with the news again.
Woo! Okay. Let's do the news.
I got absolutely no feedback on that last week. So I don't know if anybody likes this or not, but we're going to do it anyway.
Hey, we're going to keep doing it.
So we basically are going to just talk about three things, okay?
Oh,
so
wow.
I bumped it up from the two last week. Okay, we got three.
Wow.
Two of them we talked about last week.
This is going to be a 3.5-hour podcast.
We're going to rehash. We're going to start. Yeah, it will be. We're going to start with the executive committee. So we talked about last week how they were meeting.
Oh, yeah.
Now let's look back and see the decisions and things that they did.
Okay.
Right. So we're going to talk about two big things, okay?
Okay.
I'm sure they've done a lot, but we're going to.
Sure.
These are the two big things.
Okay.
So Ronnie Floyd, who's the president of the executive committee, instituted this thing they call the Vision 2025. So here's what this is. So it's basically five things that they want to achieve before the year 2025. Number one, increase the and I say number one as in that's the list. I don't know that it's actually
priorities.
Yeah. Okay, so increase the total number of full-time, fully funded missionaries by a net gain of 500, giving the SBC 4,200 full-time, fully funded missionaries through the IMB. What I didn't know, sidetrack for a second, talking to the husband of the International Missionary yesterday, is that apparently through the transition from a former president to the president now, a lot of people left right before that guy left, which I didn't know. So, I mean, there was apparently they've lost like tons and tons and tons of missionaries who just came back to the States by choice. I didn't know that. Interesting. So that makes a little more sense. Add 6,000 new churches to the SB or the Southern Baptist family, giving the SBC more than 50,000 churches. Increase the total number of workers in the field through a new emphasis on, quote, calling out the called, end quote, and then preparing those who are called out by the Lord. Turn around the ongoing decline in the SBC and reaching, baptizing, and discipling 12 to 17-year-olds in the prime of their teenage years. They're in their prime, I guess. Increase SBC-wide annual giving in successive years to reach and surpass $500 million given through the cooperative program.
Okay.
So, that's the five things.
Okay.
Any thoughts? Any?
I think it's interesting that we want more churches. I think that's interesting because you and me kind of had a short little conversation about that.
Yes, I agree.
Obviously, I work in youth ministry, so the 12 to 17 thing, I love that. I hope they have more of a something like a hard copy of something that I can get and look at and see if there's like materials or
I'm sure there's not yet, but
or things that we can do.
Right.
And then I'm good with the missionaries.
Yes.
I'm good with the giving.
Yes.
Yeah. So I'm good with that. I think it's good.
Big fan of the cooperative program.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is great stuff right
there. Well, last night at the thing the missionary was talking about,
she
mentioned the cooperative program, and I like pumped my fist, and my wife's like, who cares about the cooperative program? And I was like, you know who cares about the cooperative program? My wallet. That's who cares about the cooperative program.
That is right.
And if you don't know what the cooperative program is, basically it's where all churches give to the Southern Baptist Convention so that it can make costs living. It basically aids people that are in ministry, right?
Yeah.
And one of the big pieces of the pie is that it pays for half
of our tuition.
So
even
though I'm not in school anymore, it paid for half.
Yeah, it is awesome.
I had a guy in my class that was willingly paying double because he was part of the Church of Christ. So like I was paying
to move your membership or something.
Oh, I know. It's like, dude, just fake it.
I know.
For a little bit. But no, he said I think I annually paid like $3,000 for school and he paid like $6,000 and I'm like, dude, I don't even know what you're doing with your life.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So yeah, what do you think?
I think it's good. My biggest, and that's issue, or not issue, but thing that sticks out to me is, like you mentioned, the first thing, is this whole adding new churches.
Yeah.
Because I take the approach of, well, let's make sure that the churches we do have, which I guess are 44,000,
yeah,
are okay and settled, and we've got things going, and maybe they are in the SBC standards. I don't know. I feel like, are we just adding new churches to boost that number up, or are we adding new churches because we actually need more churches in the SBC family?
I'd just be interested to know if they have some sort of region or location in mind.
I don't know. Maybe so. I mean, because just because it's the Southern Baptist Convention doesn't mean it's in, like, the southern part of the United States.
Yeah.
So it can be all over the place.
Right.
So they may.
Like, if they're saying, hey, we're going to go to Indiana and Arizona, like, great.
Sure.
Let's do that.
Right.
But I don't know.
So that's the one thing. I think the increase the number, total number of workers in the field through a new emphasis on calling out the called, I think that's great. The whole 12 to 17 thing, I think that's great. Increase the annual giving, I think that is amazing because I enjoy that.
Yep.
So I think it was good. That was the one thing that stuck out to me. Okay, so that's the first thing. Any more comments on Vision 2025? Also, side note, very quickly, why should people care about what's going on at the SBC Executive Committee or the SBC and all? I was thinking about that this morning on the way into work, and this idea of, okay, well, we can talk about it, but I feel like we should address why our listeners or those who are just normal church laymen who are just going to their work or whatever, why should they care about what's going on within the SBC as a whole instead of just worrying about their own church?
I think you've got to realize a couple of realities. So we are, I think we said this last time, I can't remember, but we're not like the Catholic Church or the Methodist Church, right? So the Methodist Church for now, anyway.
Sure.
Anyway, so in those churches, it's kind of like one unified thing.
Yeah.
And you can't go outside of a certain parameter, right? Like, you can't do things on your own. Like, you do things at the subject to the Catholic Church or the Methodist Church. It's just how.
Okay.
It's
just so you have no say.
Yeah, you have no
saying.
Say in what you do.
Sure.
Whereas in the Baptist Church, you have almost total and utter say. Now, you have to agree with the Baptist faith and message.
Yeah.
But that's about it.
Yeah.
So you should care because it tells you, number one, what the vision of every single church that's a Southern Baptist church is or should be. Like, they're giving you, hey, we want you to know that the top people, the big wigs, the what we would view as the Baptist government thinks about what the priorities should be. So I think that's important. But I also think it's important for the, not only for the full-time pastor in the mega church, but also for the layman, because I don't know, like, ministry is just too hard to do it on your own, and sometimes you can feel like, man, I'm the only one who thinks that 12 to 17 year olds are a priority in the church, right? Mm-hmm. But then you read this, if you were to stumble across this, you would say, oh, okay, it's not just me. I have the backing of all of these higher up people that are famous and everybody knows their names or whatever. But I think it's hard to communicate, in my opinion, it's hard for the Southern Baptist Convention to communicate with all of their churches because we are so autonomous and we are all so separate.
We are.
That it's hard to communicate that.
Yeah.
And I don't know that someone's getting up on a Sunday morning communicating that to everybody. And maybe they should. I don't know. But I think I just don't know that we all know that, and I think that's just part of being a Baptist.
Yeah. I would also add that part of your giving, at least if you're a part of an SBC church, is going to the cooperative program, even if it is, I don't know what percentage it has to be, but I'm pretty sure all SBC churches are supposed to give to the cooperative program, or maybe they're forced to, I don't know. And so it's important to know kind of what in the world your money is going to. Now, you're also funding those of us who are in a seminary school.
Yeah,
doing that stuff. So that's great. But I think that may be just another thing to add to that. Okay, so with the SBC Executive Committee, let's look to the second thing now. So we talked about Vision 2025. Now we're going to talk about this whole ERLC drama.
Okay, let's do it.
That's what I called it, is the ERLC drama.
Okay.
Tell us what the ERLC is before we talk about this.
Okay, so basically it is not only a ethical committee that deals with the problems of the day and how we should feel from a Christian worldview and how that should impact our ethics, but they also deal pretty closely with legislation and the government and seeing what they're passing and then saying this is not okay or this is something that should be celebrated, and they investigate into that thing.
Sure.
So when someone passes a law on abortion or marriage, they can take that law and look into it unlike me. Like, if I got that law,
you'd have no idea.
I'd have no idea what I'm looking at, right? But they can look at that, and then they can tell us, hey, this is what's going on, and if it's good or bad.
Yeah, yeah. And it's really helpful. They also did a lot for the whole sexual abuse things going on at SBC.
Yep.
They also fight really hard for our religious freedom, yes, which is great. Do. We appreciate that. So they do a lot for the SBC. Basically, what happened during this, the committee or the meeting, is that the executive committee decided to create this task force just to sort of investigate the ERLC, sure, basically to make sure they're doing what they're asked to do, because the ERLC is an SBC entity, mm-hmm, meaning that it is funded partly by the SBC. I don't know if it's funded fully, but it is supported and funded by the SBC. It's at least governed by the SBC.
Yeah, yeah.
But, so, they did that. Well, people were automatically upset. Why are we looking into the ERLC? They're great. Why are we doing these things?
Right.
And so, the ERLC released this statement, okay, and we're going to go through, I'm going to walk through their five or six things of why they think this is wrong.
Sure.
And then just get your opinion, okay? So, this is what they said. They said, at the same time, so they started with sort of a thank you to the executive committee for all that they do. And then they say, at the same time, as members of the executive committee of the Board of Trustees of the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission, we write to express our strong opposition to the recent executive committee formation of the ERLC Study Task Force. There are several reasons why we believe this task force is unwarranted, divisive, and disrespectful. Okay, number one. The task force inappropriately seizes the responsibility and work of the ERLC trustees. So I guess the trustees are going to have to do something about it, and they're not happy with that either.
Yeah.
Number two, the executive committee failed to consult with the ERLC trustees. So they're blindsided, I guess.
Yeah.
Number three, the executive committee inappropriately formed the task force during a closed-door executive session. So all that means is that there was no media or anybody like that could be present.
Right.
It was just the members.
Just them. Yeah.
Number four, the task force overrules the will of the messengers of the SBC. Now, that's the interesting one. We'll come back to that. Number five, we support Dr. Moore's leadership in the ERLC Board of Trustees. We'll continue to hold him in the ERLC in trust on behalf of Southern Baptist.
Yep.
And this is what they say. And this may be the most staggering thing to me at the very end of the article. This is what they say. All this being the case, we as members of the Executive Committee of the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission consider it critical that messengers at the SBC annual meeting be given the opportunity to signal whether they agree with the Executive Committee's action in the creation of this task force. Should messengers approve such a task force, we will be happy to entertain such questions. Until then, we are instructing Dr. Moore and the ERLC not to comply with it until messengers have an opportunity to signal their belief that such a task force is appropriate and legitimate.
Yeah.
And that's the very end of the article. That kind of struck me. Not only do they disagree with it, but they're like, hey, we're not doing it. So, which, again, that goes right back to number four. The task force overrules the will of the messengers of the SBC. That's probably the biggest problem that people have had is that, again, and it goes right back to what you said earlier, right? You said that we all have a say. We all have a voice.
Yes.
The messengers are 10 people from each individual SBC church that goes to the annual meeting. They vote on things.
Yeah.
And that's what people are saying, that we didn't create this as an SBC.
No.
These four, five, six, seven, eight people did this, not the entirety of the SBC.
Yeah.
So what do you think about this whole drama thing going on?
Oh, man, there's a lot. So, okay. So as a Baptist...
Sure.
Okay, and I'm as Baptist as you get. Okay, as a wise man once told me, until I find a denomination that more aligns with my beliefs, I'm going to be a Baptist. And what that most likely means is I'm dying a Baptist.
Yes,
that's just the way it is.
Probably so.
And the reason why I love being a Baptist is because even if you look into the founding of what makes us Baptist, it's the nonconformity to what the man tells me that I should think or believe. Right.
Okay.
Let me give you some examples.
Yes.
So when the Reformation happened, you were introduced by these people called the Anabaptists.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now,
oh, you're throwing us way back.
I am. It's way back. Okay.
And church history.
I've skipped a lot of things too.
You have.
Okay.
You have.
So we get these people called the Anabaptists, which will eventually become Baptists. Okay. Yeah. Now these people were persecuted by the Catholic Church.
Yes.
Because of baptism, mm-hmm. They believe that believers' baptism happens after salvation, not at birth. And if you get saved, you need to be baptized again.
Mm-hmm.
And the Catholic Church is like, hey, you don't need to do that. Even the early leaders of the Anabaptists said, hey, we believe this too, but you need to not say anything because people aren't ready for it. And they said, we're our own people. We're going to do what we want to do, which sounds exactly like that. And ever since then, and they were killed for that, by the way.
They were.
Over being baptized.
Pretty brutally.
Right? So in seeing that come all the way full circle to 2020, like we said, like you just brought up, you know, we're autonomous. We do our own thing. You can't tell me what to do. Uh-huh. I have my own voice. And Baptist churches are very congregationalist in how they yes. decide on what happens, right?
Yes.
So I elect, but me and the church elect officials to make decisions. That's
yes.
what we do.
Yes.
And if a decision is made without the people that have been approved by the church to make said decisions, it's not happening. And someone's probably getting fired. Let's just be honest. That's just the way it is. That's the way it is. And so it reminds me a lot of that because the trustees of the ERLC are the ones that are elected to make the decisions for the ERLC.
Yeah.
Okay? And if they don't, and if they are not allowed to do that, then why are we having trustees in the first place?
Sure.
Okay? And then that spurs in us because not only are we Baptists and we don't like to be told what to do, but we're also Americans and we don't like to be told what to do, okay? Like the whole founding of our country is based around this idea that you can't tell me how to live my life, right? So you combine those two things together and it says we're not going to do what you asked us to do. And I agree with them. I don't know that I'm as serious about all of this because I trust Dr. Moore. I really like Russell Moore.
Yes.
A lot of people don't because he's not a Trump fan. He's been very outspoken against Trump a couple of times, and people automatically dislike him for that, and I understand that, but at the end of the day, I respect that the man has his own opinion, and he stands by his own opinion, and he's not swayed by what someone else thinks. Anyway, but I like Dr. Moore, and I trust him. I've heard him speak numerous times. I've read a couple of his books. He's pretty good, I think. I think he's pretty good.
Yeah.
And I trust him, and the trustees obviously trust him and the ERLC to do their job. And I think that the Southern Baptist Convention, the people that show up to that, should be the ones that vote to see if this happens or not. I think that's totally fair.
Yeah. And they may. I mean, they may have to, for the ERLC to do it. I think I have two opinions. So I agree exactly with what you said. Now, the other side of me is like, well, if there's not an issue, then why not just go ahead with whatever they want to do, and then this is all sort of blown over and it's whatever, not a big deal.
Yeah.
Instead of saying, okay, well, we're not going to do this until, and I get it, right? We're big fans of congregationalism. We're big fans of everyone voting.
Yeah.
And you should be, but I
it's like the principle of the thing.
Maybe, that's fine. But let's just not get into the. There's already enough divisiveness in the SBC at this moment.
Sure.
Let's not add unnecessarily another. Because, again, it's the executive committee's idea or job to sort of look over these things. Check. It's almost like checking balances within your government. They're sort of checking and making sure everything's okay. Now, is it their job to form a tax force? Probably not.
But what I was going to say. I was going to say, but isn't the divisiveness not coming from them originally?
It is.
It's coming from this executive committee.
And
I don't know.
I don't either. And I think people will decide, and they may vote it down. People are pretty big fans of the ERLC.
I would probably vote it down.
Yeah, I mean, they're pretty big fans. So that's my last question for you. Do you think the ERLC has a place in the SBC?
Oh,
you think
sure.
It's necessary.
Yes.
It's important.
Because we live pretty busy lives, right? Like, we do our own thing. We have our own ministry. We have our own church. We're dealing with real life issues every day. I don't have time to take a bill from Washington and turn all 700 of its pages to know what it means.
Right.
And if Russell Moore and the brilliant people that work with him can do that, and we trust them to do that, they should be free to do that. So
I think we should. I agree.
I'm totally in with that.
Well, a lot of us also don't live in Washington to be able to fight for these things when the time comes.
Yeah, we live in one of the southernmost regions of our country.
Yeah.
We live pretty far away from that.
Right. Okay, so that's just the first thing. That was just the first thing, okay? Right, we're gonna fly through this second thing because we're just going to mention it, and we're going to go to the third thing very quickly.
Okay.
So there's something else going on that we talked about last week. Do you remember what it was?
The Weinstein stuff?
Yes, it is the Weinstein stuff. Okay, so they made a decision. We talked about last week how they thought that the majority of it was going to end in acquittal.
Yeah.
Part of it did.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is I don't remember what article I got this from, but whoever this is, congratulations to you. All right, women's rights, I'm sure they're not listening. I don't know, maybe so. Maybe there's somebody.
I don't know, man.
I will be impressed.
Yeah.
If I get we reached out, I will delete this episode, do whatever I have to. Anyways. Yeah. Okay, so women's rights groups and actresses who have accused Harvey Weinstein of sexual abuse described feeling an overwhelming wave of relief and camaraderie on Monday after a jury found the producer guilty of one count of rape and one count of committing a criminal sexual act. Okay, so great. They found him guilty of those two. Now, what's interesting is that Weinstein was acquitted on the two most serious charges of predatory sexual assault, which each carried a potential life sentence. Okay, so the more serious charges he was acquitted on,
okay,
meaning that he was just found, not that he was found not guilty, but there was just not enough evidence to really convict him. But he was convicted of two.
Sure.
So he probably will end up in prison somewhere, I guess, I imagine.
Sure.
Now, what's also interesting, by the way, this article is from the Los Angeles Times. Found it. What's also interesting is that he still has another trial to go through. This was just in New York. He's got one more to go through in Los Angeles, I believe.
Yeah.
So there could be, that could be where the nail hits the head, I guess.
And he still, or where the, and he still argues that he's an innocent man.
He is.
I mean, whether he is or not,
let's say,
that's not for me to decide.
Right. Well,
it doesn't look like he is.
No, I
don't even know him. I don't know anything about it besides what I read on Twitter.
No, I don't either. So, but that's interesting. So he was acquitted of two of the biggest things, but he was found guilty of some of it. So he probably will be in prison for some time at least, which people are excited about. So whatever you think about that.
Woo! So happy.
Yeah. Okay. So the third thing, let's talk about the coronavirus. Okay. So this thing is happening right now. Okay.
Yeah,
this thing is crazy. Yeah. So the updated thing we have, or the updated information we have, is that the White House is requesting $1.25 billion. That is $1.25 billion. That is a lot of money.
That's a lot of money.
A lot of money. In emergency funding from Congress as part of a total commitment of $2.5 billion to fight the novel coronavirus, according to a congressional
official.
Yep. I'll say it eventually. Congressional official. I don't know why I tried to say congregation. I'm too busy thinking in the Southern Baptist Convention. Okay. Nancy Pelosi's not too happy about that, saying Trump's trying to pull money from wherever, whatever, doesn't matter. The biggest thing I'm curious about, I'm going to finish going through this. So as of Monday, 53 people in the United States have tested positive for the newly discovered virus, known officially as the COVID-19, which emerged in China last December. Of those cases, 39 are among people who were repatriated to the United States on charter flights from Chinese city of Wuhan, the epicenter of the outbreak, or from the Diamond Princess cruise ship. As of Tuesday, China's National Health Commission said it has received 77,658 reports of confirmed cases and 2,663 deaths on the Chinese mainland. So again, that is 77,658 reports and 2,663 deaths. Okay?
Okay.
Okay, so the outbreak of the new coronavirus has continued to spread overseas with at least 2,069 confirmed cases in 29 other countries, resulting in at least 23 fatalities.
Okay.
2,669 confirmed cases, 23 fatalities.
Okay.
Okay, these are interesting numbers.
Okay.
Okay, that's all I got there. But why I reemphasize those numbers is because I think we think of the coronavirus as if it's this most like, and it is tragic in a way, right?
Sure. Sure.
But I don't know that it's like the Black Plague.
Right.
That is absolutely killing everyone off.
Sure.
Okay. So what's your thoughts?
Oh, man. I'm not scared of the coronavirus. But anyone that knows me is probably not shocked by that.
Mm-hmm.
If I got the coronavirus and died, then that's how God wanted me to go. So whatever.
Okay.
So there's that. Sure. But I also think, though, I agree with you that I don't know that it's as serious as the Black Plague, but I also think that, number one, it wouldn't have been as bad if China would have said something or done something earlier.
Okay? Sure.
So there's that. Number two, I think that it's also important for us as America to take it seriously and say,
okay,
we're going to put our foot down, we're going to stamp this out, we're going to deal with it, because in modern, you know, it's a virus, right? So it's curable, I would say, if you're calling it a virus.
Sure.
You know, it's not cancer.
There's not a cure yet.
But. Right. But I'm saying if you pour billions of dollars into a funnel, you're going to, I have full trust that it will be.
Hopefully.
And so I don't know.
I'm not saying that it's not serious. I'm just saying if you're not careful, we'll look at it as if it's this worst thing in the world. And there's not. Now, people are dying.
Sure.
But it's not like, out of those 77,000, 2,000 of those people.
You can't
away.
Brush it off, but you also can't be in a panic.
Sure.
You've got to be somewhere in the middle. Like, you can't just be like, we're all going to die, the sky's falling. Like, you can't do that. But you also can't be like, it's not that big a deal. It's somewhere in the middle, and where you fall in the middle, I don't know that it matters.
Yeah.
But I don't know. My biggest question, and we're not going to talk about this, is this a plague? Like, is this a God sent?
That was one of my questions.
Plague.
Did God send this virus?
I don't know.
You don't know?
And I'm not talking about it.
Why not?
Because we have other stuff to get into. We've been on this podcast for a while now.
We've only been on it for a couple of minutes.
A couple?
Answer the question.
How much is a couple?
Did God send this virus? People are curious.
I'm not going to go into it.
Why not?
We can go into it on a separate podcast.
No, we can't.
Yeah. Well, then we can't
Give me your one-word answer. Yes or no? Leave them hanging.
Maybe. There you go.
Maybe.
There's my middle ground.
Interesting. Yeah. Why maybe?
I'm not going to go into it.
So what do pastors, I think I heard this other question somewhere else, and it may have been on another podcast. You may also have heard it. But what do pastors do who live near this virus? Should they get up and leave? Should they stay and help? What should they do?
Oh, man. I think they should stay.
They should stay?
Like, should they stay for, if everybody leaves their church, I don't know why you would stay. You know, like, sure. If you're just showing up to the church every day and everyone's gone because they've deserted the area, I mean, I don't know why you should stay. But on the same token, if you feel like you should go to hospitals and pray with these people or pray healing on them or whatever, great.
So, is there anything we can do?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, we can pray for them, but I mean, sure. I don't know if there's... You know, I don't want people flocking to them just to contract the virus and then move back to their house and give it to me, just personally, selfishly. Right. But at the same time, I think that's all you can do. I mean, I don't know that we are the ones that are to be going next to these people and laying hands on them and healing them. I don't know. Maybe we are. I don't know.
Maybe. Who knows?
I don't know.
Maybe we're going to China.
Maybe. Let's go.
Who knows?
Let's go.
Alrighty. Well, let's talk about angelology. Angelology.
Holy. Oh, man.
Let's talk about angels. What is the doctrine? What is that? The doctrine of... I said it in the way it's spelled, but how do you actually say it?
I don't know.
It's angel-ally, but I don't know.
Angelology?
And maybe.
Angelology?
Maybe. Is that what your paper says there?
I haven't put it on this paper in any way, so I don't
That's
know.
True. You haven't. I'm looking at it right now.
No, I have not. And it probably that probably tells you the deeper rooted issue with how much I actually care about this topic. Because I was pretty open. You weren't in there, but I was pretty open about not being a huge fan of this topic.
Of angels?
Yeah, I'm not a huge
fan. I don't know. My guardian angel's pretty solid.
Oh, man.
Oh, jeez. I tell you, she's looking after me, or he, or whoever that is.
Do angels have gender?
It. Maybe. They. There could be a couple of them. I may need multiple.
I mean, they do have guy names.
They do. They do all have guy names, don't they?
Yeah.
At least the three main ones.
Yeah.
So, but okay, but all seriousness, let's talk about the doctrine of angels, which is what we're doing in theology right now, the lock and key.
Yeah.
So, all right, you do this thing.
Okay, so before I start, I just want to say that even though I don't really care for this topic,
sure.
Not only did I study the hardest for this topic and write the most about this topic, but I actually enjoyed teaching this topic.
Okay, good.
Let me just... preface my negative comment in the beginning with several positive ones.
So I'm looking at three different pages here. Did it take you like an hour and a half to go through all these pages?
Man. Actually, okay, so we got stopped in the middle. Okay. And it had been about 45 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you just stopped?
We're having a pretty good conversation.
Okay.
And then I said, okay, guys, I'm going to run through this, and then we're going to talk about some stuff at the end. And then we just ran through it.
Right through it.
Okay, so I have a Shakespeare quote here. It's in the Green Book. It says, angels are bright steel, though the brightest fail. It's from Macbeth. And I think that's something that we need to realize is even though we view angels as these crazy, beautiful, human-like creatures, that the brightest of them fail. And I think that is super important. And in Ephesians chapter 6, verse 12, the Apostle Paul says, for our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against rulers, authorities, against the cosmic powers of darkness, against evil spiritual forces in the heavens. And I think angels are mostly concerned in the Bible with creation, providence, and revelation. And to say it as theologically as I can, there are good and bad angels. How about that for a theological statement?
That is great.
But I think that's how you have to land on it, because there aren't morally neutral angels.
Okay.
There's just not.
They're either good or bad.
They're good or bad. And I think I want to squash this idea that angels are white people in white robes with angel wings, with halos, and they fly around and help people. I don't know that that's exactly what's going on with angels, because every time that someone seems to interact with an angel, they fall on their face because they think they're going to die.
Yeah.
And that's either because they realize the power and the authority of the angel, or who's given said angel authority, or they're scary. So I don't know.
I think they are. I think they're pretty terrifying.
I think they're pretty terrifying. But that's just my own opinion.
Sure.
And I think it goes along with the whole, you know, when you see pictures of Jesus, he's usually white.
Yeah.
And Jesus was not white.
He was not.
I'm going to say that on this podcast 1,000 times. He was not white, and angels are not white either. So, and even though I enjoy that I'm white, I'm not afraid to say that. I don't know that all angels are white. Anyway.
Okay. Keep going.
So, good angels. You got the angel Gabriel and Michael. We'll talk about them a little bit more in detail here soon. And then bad angels, you've got Satan. I'm sure there's tons of other bad angels in the world, but Satan seems to be the one people get hung up on.
Kind of key one right there.
And there's a fascinating conversation I want to have about Satan at the very end that I did not include in these notes, so you just get ready for that.
Oh, dang.
However, the key to understanding angels is this: they do not experience salvation. I think that
is important.
That is super important,
that is
okay?
Very important.
Because they are not humans.
No.
1 Peter 1:12 has one of my favorite verses, and it ends with saying, angels long to catch a glimpse of these things. And Peter's talking about salvation, things like that.
Yeah.
They long to know God in a way that we do.
So are they just born? So we're going to talk about them being created in a second. But
sure.
Are they just, whenever Jesus comes back or there's a new heaven and a new earth, do the angels just disappear? Do they just, if they're not saved? Or are they like born?
Well, like
saved?
I said, I think they're good and bad. I think they're made good.
So like the bad ones go with Satan.
The bad ones fail a while ago.
And the good ones.
Because the Bible just doesn't seem to put forth this picture that angels are continually falling from God's grace, right?
Okay.
It seems as though the good angels made their choice and the bad angels made theirs. So it doesn't seem like, there's no evidence that they're not still falling.
Right.
But I think the Bible points us in a direction that says there's good and bad. But no, I do think they'll be with us. You know, if Satan and demons are going to be locked into hell with all of the unbelievers, I think that the good ones will be
hanging out with us.
Hanging out with us in all of our freedom or whatever.
Yeah.
All right, so good angels. The general name for angels in biblical Hebrew is pronounced Malak or Malak. Not a huge Hebrew scholar, so all you're getting from me. Other names include cherub, holy ones, heavenly hosts, sons of God, and seraphim. Okay, whenever you see the name angel, it's one of those words.
You know what? It's not. You know what I'm surprised you didn't add there?
What?
Angel of the Lord.
Yes.
I know you did it on purpose, but it's interesting that you...
Yeah.
Do you talk about it later?
No.
Okay.
New Testament, the general names for angels in biblical Greek is angelos. Or angelos, whatever, however you want to pronounce that. Again,
angelos.
I'm like angles.
Angle-os.
I'm better with Greek because it's more like English. Like I didn't make that up. It really is angelos. And the word is used 175 times in the New Testament, and only 6 times is it talking about men. Okay, so I think it's important to know that some of these Greek terms overlap into describing humans, but I think the majority of the time, as you would see from 175 to 6. Basically an angel term. And other names include angels of heaven, holy angels, spirits, dominions, principalities, powers, and living creatures. So that's how they're described. Individual angels, you have Michael, who's the archangel with the great prince, Daniel 10:13, 21, and 12:1. So you get this, and like we'll talk about it a little bit later, you get this, it's what seems like hierarchy within the angels, so it seems like they have some system. You also see Michael in Jude 9 and Revelation 12. So the archangel Michael is not just in the Old Testament. He's in the New Testament, too. So there's some overlap there. The angel Gabriel interprets Daniel's dreams. So Daniel apparently has relationships with a bunch of angels. And also to people in the New Testament, especially people who are, being pregnant with our Savior or being pregnant with John the Baptist, whatever. So they have all these interactions with angels. Any questions about that before we go into their origin?
Nope.
Okay, cool. Angels are created beings and therefore have not always existed.
Mm.
And that's in Psalm 148. So I think that's important. It's not like God, the Father, Jesus, and the Holy Spirit were standing there with the heavenly hosts. No, they were just them, and then they created them. Now, we don't know when they created them. It's not explicitly talked about, but obviously they're created by day 6. Genesis 2:1 and Exodus 20:11 kind of back that up.
Okay,
and
explain that. Why do we know that they were created by day 6?
Because we know of the conflict between Satan and God.
Okay,
happens.
And that happens before day 6.
Yes, because Satan obviously... is created before he has this conversation with the woman. I think that's super important. Nature and substance, they are personal, so they're emotional. They worship, engage in conversation, make choices. So it's not as though they're robots, right? They're more robotic than we are, I would say. Sure. But they're still not completely programmed. Like, they make choices. And they don't normally appear in human form, which I think is interesting. They're spiritual beings. And Genesis 18 and 19 really unpacks that thought. Now, sometimes they do appear in a bodily form, so I'll give credit where credit's due. But usually they're not just humans that are spiritual or whatever. And then you get into this concept of, okay, so what can angels do? So angels don't marry. So in Matthew 22, Jesus says angels don't marry or are given in marriage. They don't do that. Which leads me to believe that they cannot have any sort of sexual activity with humans. Okay? Because I think they're spiritual. So I don't think that they can have any sort of sex relations with people. We'll get to that at the very end.
Oh, okay.
But I think...
How do they reproduce?
I don't know that they do.
So God just creates them and that's it?
I don't know that he's created anymore. I think that's the point.
So there's a limited number of
animals. I think that there's a limited number. And they don't die, which is interesting. In Luke 20:36, you know, it's not as though... It's almost like our human soul is spiritual. And our human soul will never die. Now, I think God has the strength, the power, and the authority to destroy my soul if he so pleases.
Okay.
But he does not, because God's awesome. They are glorious, so I think they look better than we do.
Probably.
I think there's a lot more detail given to angels than us. Even though we are the image of God, I think that they look better than we do. So there's that. They're wise but not omniscient, so they know things. They know a lot of things. They might know more than we do, but they don't know everything. So I think that that's important. They're strong but not omnipotent. So they have a lot of strength and power, but they aren't as powerful as God is. God is the most powerful being. And I think Satan is a great example of that. And I think if you were to read Job, you would know exactly where Satan stands with God in all of this. And they're more glorious than man, Psalm 8. So you get all that. Anything else?
Nope.
Anything about that?
Nope.
Okay, I'm kind of speeding through this because I really want to get to the final two things that I want to talk about. Okay, so there's a number and organization. There are many angels, and they have some sort of rank. So we get from the human conversations that are going between these two, from humanity and angels, we get some sort of rank within them. But primarily, they're concerned with ministry and with God himself. They glorify God, worship God alone, obey God's will in the following ways. They give the law, so they appear before the people of the Old Testament and say, here's what the law is. They deliver messages from God to people. They care for believers. They patrol the earth. They minister wrath. They announce Christ, and they assist Christ. So they do a lot of things. It's not as though they're sitting somewhere twiddling their thumbs, being like, I wonder when God's going to tell me what to do next. No, they've got a pretty defined role. And God's like, hey, go do this, and they go do it. And to man, they have an interesting relationship, God's favor and judgment, give divine special revelation, celebrate our salvation, tell us about our judgment, and announce the Lord's return. So it's kind of the same thing, but it more towards humanity. Anything about good angels?
No, I like that celebrate our salvation part there.
Yeah, I think that's awesome.
It's good stuff.
You know, and again, it's one of these things where like it's something that they view as something higher than themselves, and they are happy for us because we're the ones that experience that. Okay, so you got bad angels, which are demons.
Dang.
Old Testament, Satan means accuser, adversary. Demons were sometimes worshipped, and I think it's important for us to know that when God wipes out a people group in the Old Testament, or the people of Israel go out and start mass murdering people, it's not as though they're mass murdering a whole Mr. Rogers neighborhood of people. They are very much killing people that not only sacrifice their babies but as their offerings, but they also worship demons. So I think that that's important for us to know. And we're not talking about that in God's divine judgment on people through mass execution. But hopefully one day we will. Anyway.
Sure.
New Testament, the biblical Greek term diabolos is 37 times and Satanus 36 times. So a lot of people argue that Satan and the devil are different, or that the serpent is different from Satan. I don't know that there's a whole lot. I think there's more information for a view that's against that than for it. Jesus identifies him as Beelzebul, Baal, Lord of the Flies, Ruler of the Demons. That's Matthew 12:22-32. And if I'm not mistaken, I think that's when the Pharisees accuse him of being demon-possessed or something like that. I don't remember exactly.
Probably.
And then he's
yes, they do.
And
you're right.
And he's like, you don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
Which Jesus usually does.
Because they, you're right.
He's known as the tempter, the enemy, a murderer, prince of the power of the air, adversary, wicked one, and the great dragon. And all demons are subordinate to Satan. So I think this is interesting. So the devil and all his angels rebel against God, right? And they're sent down to earth. So why do you think, and I'm asking you, so why do you think the demons are still subordinate to Satan? Why do you think that is?
He's the ruler. He is ruling over all.
Right, but wouldn't you think that if I joined with the loser of the battle between God and Satan, that when I was sent down to earth, I would be like, you know what? You're maybe, the loser and I'm out.
Maybe Satan's more powerful.
Maybe. Maybe this is, maybe God commands that they do that. Like God says this is the way it is. And you
do
have
we know
to do
that?
It. No. But I don't know why they do.
You just know that they're subordinate.
Yeah. All I know is that they're subordinate to him. I don't know.
I don't either.
Okay. Just something for you to think about.
Crazy.
I didn't think about that until I was teaching and I read that sentence, even though I typed it out and I was like, interesting. Origin and fall between Genesis 1:31 and 3:1-5, Satan rebels.
Sure.
Okay. And so you get this kind of the way it's described in Isaiah 14. Why some evil angels are bound and others are free to oppose God, we are not told. There's no indication in Scripture that evil angels can be redeemed from their fallen condition. So I think that's super important to know. And what's also important to know is there is also no hint of remorse. Yeah. So when Jesus interacts with demons like the Legion, right, where he interacts with this demon-possessed guy, and it's not just that he's possessed by one demon, he's possessed by many.
Yes.
And they don't ask for forgiveness.
No.
But they ask to be sent into pigs.
Yes.
So I think that's important to know, is that they are not looking to get back into the good graces of God.
No, they just...
And I think when you really think about it, they're similar to humans in that way. I don't know, because when you read Revelation, it's not as though God comes back and people go, oh no, take us back, we're so sorry. That's not... What beings that rebel against God are like.
Sure.
They very much are like, yeah, we're good with our choice.
Those pigs run into a...
and they kill themselves.
They die. Then people are upset about it.
Yeah. I mean, if all my pigs died, I'd be pretty upset.
They made some money off those
Jesus
pigs.
Did not care about said pigs. Anyway.
I'm sure he cared about them.
So nature and substance, there's no proof of that. similar to good angels, but opposite in intention. They're intelligent. They sway doctrine. And yet they're foolish for following Satan, because as we know, we believe Scripture is 100% true.
So they have a choice to not follow Satan?
No.
Okay, so they're just innately foolish?
Yeah. Like, if you're following Satan instead of Jesus, like, you're
right.
You're not doing well.
Okay.
You're doing right.
Okay, I get what you're saying. So there can't be, like, another demon that, like, comes up and is like,
and
I'm
he's
now
like,
the
I'm
ruler.
I'm my own guy. Yeah, yeah, no, that's not happening.
Okay, it's just Satan.
And I think it's important to know that they sway doctrine, and I would go as far as to say when people use biblical truth to try to sway you to think differently than what the Bible is actually saying, I'm not opposed to thinking that that's the devil trying to sway you into thinking something different, to deceive someone different. But that's just my opinion.
No comment.
There's no further comment on that. But
no further comment.
I want to.
Because I almost said something.
Yeah,
I'm not going to.
Yeah, I know. I almost said it too. So
I'm not going
keeping
to.
Keeping that to myself.
Keep going.
But that's just for you to think about.
Sure.
They're strong but not omnipotent and will ultimately be defeated. So I think it's interesting that even though the devil or Satan knows God and he knows that he's the only way to salvation, right? And he knows the Bible, Satan obviously, I think, can read, okay? And if he were to read Revelation, he obviously doesn't think that that's true. And he obviously thinks that he's going to have some sort of, he's going to win. And I think that that's ultimately...
Poor guy.
Foolish. No, not poor guy. Are you kidding me? Okay. Appearance. And no wonder, for Satan disguises himself as an angel of light, which is 2 Corinthians 11:14. And I think that is huge, okay? And it terrifies me that if I ever have some sort of experience with an angel, if it's beautiful and glorious, I'm going to think to myself, is this the devil? And they mostly appear in a deception, which can give the assumption that all demons can change form. So we see Satan as himself. We see Satan as a beautiful angel. We see Satan as a snake. So I get this thought process that if he can do that,
then his demons can
do that also.
Because he's not more powerful than them, right?
would say he is.
Okay.
But I think that if he's a demon, if he's the lord of the demons, then demons can do what he can do. Maybe they can't do it as much as him or like. They don't have as many options.
Sure.
I don't know. There's just not a lot of there's just not a lot of evidence for that. But no, I think that you can assume that they can do that.
Yeah.
Organization, Satan is the ruler of the demons, but it is best not to speculate because of lack of information. So even though we have like archangels and things like that that we can kind of speculate on,
yeah,
there's no other form of demon hierarchy.
Okay.
Now you could talk about hierarchy as far as Satan, the Antichrist, and the prophet in the Old Testament. Like you could make that type of argument, but as far as demons go, you can't make any sort of argument. They incite false worship. They inflict physical suffering. They hinder ministry. They inspire false teachers and deceive the whole world. So this is part of their job.
Yeah,
is to do bad things. And the one who commits sin is of the devil, for the devil has sinned from the beginning. The Son of God has revealed for this purpose to destroy the devil's work, which is 1 John 3:8. And that's some pretty powerful stuff. That should make people uncomfortable. And that totally goes against my own view of Satan. But we'll get back to that. So their destiny, the Bible nowhere indicates that this is an eternal conflict. Like, this conflict will end. So it's not as though what we're going through right now will be the way it is when we're in heaven. Mm-hmm. And Revelation 20 is the ultimate fate. Okay, yep. So I want to address two things.
Okay,
at least. Okay, so number one, we get this Genesis chapter 6.
Yes, we do.
Story. Okay.
Yes.
So let me just sum it up for you.
Okay.
So there are these people called the sons of God who are called the Nephilim, and they mate with these women. Okay.
Sure.
And they have children who are giants. Okay.
Sure.
Now, there's three different views you could do from this. Okay.
Okay.
So number one, you have the sons of the princes. Do you know this view?
I don't know. Remind me.
Okay, so sons of the princes is basically that there's princes from another area that come in and they mate with these people. Okay.
Okay.
So that's a thought. Okay. I don't really like that view at all because I don't know that there's any support for that. But
okay,
it's whatever. The second view is that these are angels that are mating with people. Okay. And what makes their children massive or whatever is that they are spiritual beings. So there's that.
Okay.
And then there's the third view, which are the sons of God, quote unquote, are Sethites. So if you read chapters 4 and 5, Seth is the son of Adam and Eve, right? And Seth replaces Abel because Cain kills Abel, and Seth becomes the next son. So God gives them another son, and his name is Seth. And the descendants of Seth are these. Are these people?
Or the sons of God.
Are the sons of God, yeah.
Okay.
So I'm going to put you on the spot.
Right, well.
If you had to go either way.
It would be Sethites.
Okay, that's where I am too.
Yeah.
Now, I've had good arguments from the angels.
Well, and I wonder if that S would be capitalized if it was angels. But I think you're also, it would have to be only male angels. I don't know. Without really diving into... Yeah.
Nobody knows the answer to the question.
I would say Sethites. Now, I also don't want to say that just because I don't like the idea that this is angels.
Sure.
But I don't want that to sway my answer. But
well, but I also take into the account that Jesus says they can't marry, right? Now, obviously, people can have sexual relations with each other when they're not married. But I think that that might be... I think that you can take information from that statement from Jesus and go, well, that means that angels can't procreate. Because if they're spiritual beings... Like, they can appear in a human form, but does that mean that they can have sexual relations with people? I don't know. I don't think that they can, but that's just my...
Sure.
That's just my opinion.
Yeah.
Okay, so then you get into this other arena, this other question that I want to... And I encourage people to go read Genesis chapter 6 and kind of read that for yourself and see what you think. Now, don't get carried away reading in context, no. But I encourage you to go do that. And at the end of the green book, literally there's three views at the very end for this type of thing.
Cool.
Okay, so there's also this train of thought. So let's go back to this Satan question. There's also this train of thought where we've got to characterize Satan in some way. Right? Like we can't just say, yes, Satan exists and then move on. No, Satan has something to do with our spiritual life. So There's a couple of trains of thought. So number one, some people think that Satan is just like this extremely powerful being and that we should be terrified of said being and that he is one of the main adversaries in any sort of spiritual confrontation or situation. And then there's the other view that Satan is powerful, but he's not the main problem that humanity faces, right? So you have these two trains of thought. One is a lesser view of Satan, and one is a bigger view of
Satan.
Say
your first view again.
Okay, so the first one is that Satan is this giant adversary in the Christian life.
Okay, so he affects us a lot.
He affects us a lot.
And
like
the second view.
He has a lot to do with what we do. And the second view is he's a powerful being, but he doesn't have as much authority or power that a lot of people would ascribe him to.
Sure.
What do you think?
I think the second one.
Okay.
Is what I'm thinking.
So why do you...
Off the top of my head.
Why do you...
I go to Job.
Okay.
And I feel like that's what everyone goes to. But
sure.
If Satan had all of this... So he would have to... Well, I don't know, because then if you go to Job, it sort of seems like it would be the first one, because God gives Satan the opportunity to do a lot of terrible things to Job.
Sure.
Which makes him seem like he has a lot of authority mm-hmm. or a lot of power, but mm-hmm. I don't know that he does.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's just my first opinion is the second one. I was going to ask you if you take the first one.
No, I take the second one.
Okay.
I gravitate towards the second one solely because of several reasons. Number one, our greatest problem is sin.
Yeah, I agree.
It's not the devil.
Right.
Okay? So our inherent issue is ourself.
And now, does Satan make us sin?
No.
No. So he doesn't lead to sin in any way.
I think he could lead to that.
Sure.
But I don't know that he's like taking your hand and grabbing the sin.
So it's not as if he created sin.
No, I don't think so.
It's all his fault.
No.
Okay.
Now I think because you got to go back to Adam and Eve, right?
Yes.
So the serpent is with them and he says, did God really say, right? And they go, huh, maybe I can be like God. Maybe I can be God.
Which is where the first sin happened, right?
Right. So then they're thinking this over, right? And John Piper writes a great article where he says, was it the tendons in their hand grabbing the apple and the tendons and the muscles in their mouth biting down on the apple? That's the sin. And he says, no, it was the act of committing to making this type of act is the sin. And so it was over before they ever even grabbed the apple or the fruit. Sorry. I just gravitate towards an apple. It makes sense in my brain. It
could be an orange.
I don't know.
A pear.
Maybe you could bite into oranges before the fall. Anyway.
Banana. Oh, my
banana.
Goodness.
Dude, you're struggling today. You are struggling.
I just combined banana apple. Maybe that was the thing.
Right. So then you've got it. So, but I firmly believe that choice, I think Satan is punished for that choice, obviously.
Okay.
But the choice ultimately falls on the man and the woman to make the right decision.
Yeah.
And so.
Well, doesn't it do that for Job? It's that same way for Job, because God gives Satan the ability to tempt Job or whatever, take away all his things. But it's still up to Job whether or not he's going to stay faithful to God or sin.
Yeah.
Right.
And Job is obviously better than Adam.
Yeah,
if we had to rank people, Job is clearly a cut above Adam in every way. And so I struggle because, okay, so here's a question. Okay. So I think people have an incorrect view of Satan in general. I just do. So have you ever heard someone say, man, the devil's really after so-and-so.
Sure.
Or the devil's really got a hold of so-and-so. Okay, so let's say there's a church in Blackshear, Georgia, where someone utters the statement, man, Satan's really got a hold of so-and-so. But then there's also a person in a church in Africa who says, man, Satan's really got a hold of so-and-so.
One of them's wrong.
Okay, so, but why are they wrong, though?
Because Satan's not, he can't, go ahead, sorry, I'm interrupting you.
No, you're not. I want it to be a conversation. So why are they wrong?
Because he can't be everywhere at once.
Right. He's not omnipresent.
Yeah.
He can't be in two places at once. Now, the argument is that since he's the power over demons, then he has a wider range of power.
He can send them
right?
out.
But the truth, though, is still that Satan can't be in all places at all times. He can only affect personally one person at a time. And I think that is super important to the way we view the world. Now, we'll say it is a lot of revelation about God coming back and defeating Satan and the Antichrist and the mm-hmm. prophet. Yeah, I think there's a lot of attention drawn to that. And then that 1 John chapter 3 verse, that anyone who sins is of the devil.
Yeah.
Like, that goes totally against everything that I'm saying. So, and I totally understand that.
Right.
But I think we get into this argument where we start putting Jesus and the devil on like in a boxing ring,
mm-hmm.
and that they're equals, and that they just fight it out, and whoever wins the person's soul. Like, that's not it. Like, Jesus knocks the devil out. Like, that's just the way that it is every time. every time they're confronted with each other, Jesus is utterly and totally superior to Satan in every way. And I think it's dangerous for us to say, well, Satan's got to control, is really dealing with this person. I don't know that I've ever once thought that my sin issues were because of the devil.
Sure.
Never. I've never uttered a man, the devil's really after me. No. I'm just not that way.
Yeah. Well, we can't prove it. We can't.
And I think, number one, I think the devil, the focus on the devil can give me a lack of knowledge about sin. Right?
Sure. Okay.
So, I agree with that. When you elevate the devil, you automatically decrease sin. Right? And I think sin is your problem. You're not getting saved from Satan. You're not saved from Satan. You're saved from sin.
Right. You're taking away your personal responsibility.
Yes.
Your problems.
Exactly.
And throwing them on somebody else.
Exactly. You're throwing them on the devil. And I think that's what the devil wants you to do.
Right.
The devil wants you to say, yeah, it's my fault. Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm the reason for all your problems. And then you never find any resolution for anything in your life. And I think that's our problem in general, is that we view sin so low and we view Satan so high because you're not saved from Satan, you're saved from your sin. And I think your sin is so much more, it's so much stronger than the devil, because sin separates you from God, not the devil.
Right.
So again, sin is your problem. And I think we love as people to decrease sin and elevate the devil, because the sin is our problem and the devil is a separate entity from us. Right? So it's just another way for me to say, well, I'm not that bad.
Right.
Where in reality is we are that bad. We're awful. And the reason I know that we're awful, not only is because I believe it and because the Bible teaches it, but I spent a week last week studying total depravity, and it was not fun. It was not a great and uplifting week. It just wasn't. But I think at the end of the day, we've got to realize that, yes, Satan is powerful. Yes, Satan has something to do with the end of the world. Yes, Satan is an adversary of God. But at the same time, he's not an equal. He's not even close to an equal. And he's not even an equal with your sin. He's not even close. So I think we've got to be really careful when we say statements like, man, the devil's really after us. Now, I agree, the devil could send his demons to do whatever, right? Mm-hmm. And do the devil's work for him. I get that. I don't want to minimize that. But to say that the devil personally is attacking you, I don't know that you can know that. I don't know that that's something that's to be known. I think you could, but I just don't think. I just don't think that's.
You must be a special someone.
Yeah. Like when he appears to Jesus, that's pretty hardcore.
Yeah.
Like I don't know how many other times the devil's appeared to people. I just don't. Right. Maybe he does it all the time. I don't know. Maybe he can travel really fast. I don't know what he can do. But it seems to be that the devil, you know, he's one thing. He's one angel. He can't be everywhere at one time.
Right.
So I don't know.
Do you think he has like red horns and a red face as we always depict?
Probably not. I think we've made that up. And I think it's this cartoon version of the devil that gives us a misconception of the devil. The devil isn't some red guy with a tail and a pitchfork running around.
Right.
Like, it's just not. That's not the devil.
Yeah.
And to make light of it is crazy. So let me end on this, okay? So you would affirm that the devil, demons, and angels are real.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. So that being said, how do you feel about movies that deal with spirits, demon possession, and all that? How do you feel about that?
When you say spirits, you're talking about like ghosts?
No, I'm just talking about demons and angels and things like that. Demons specifically.
Okay, so like...
like demon possession.
Movies that deal with like exorcisms and things?
Exorcisms. Oh man, I quoted the movie yesterday. What was it called? Paranormal Activity.
Okay.
Okay, so how do you view that?
I mean, I guess it could be real, but I don't know that I...
Would you watch it?
Would I watch it?
Yeah.
I haven't.
Okay.
Probably not. But I also don't know that that's my stance on. I'm not a big horror movie fan.
Yeah, I'm not either. Well, the only reason I bring it up is because I feel like it's. I don't know that it's true. Okay. So there's a scene in the Paranormal Activity movie where they're trying to catch the demon. So they've got video cameras everywhere.
Sure.
And they put flour on the ground in their room, the white flour.
Uh-huh.
And the door opens in the middle of the night, and you see the footsteps of this invisible thing, and it drags the woman out of the bed, okay? And it makes sounds and slam doors or whatever. It's kind of comical if you watch it with, like, the sound off. It's kind of comical. Anyway, I don't know that that's real, but at the same time, I fully believe that demon possession is real, and I fully believe that there are things happening around us that we don't see because there's spiritual things happening.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't, I don't think we need to watch that stuff. I think you're opening yourself up to things that you don't want to be opened up to. And so after that movie, I've not seen any other ones. After that movie, I'm like, no, I can't. It's too close to being real. I don't think it is real, right? I don't think that's how it works, but it's too close to being real that I don't really want to open myself up to that. Because in seminary, I heard an exorcism on tape. So I heard that.
That sounds terrible.
I heard several stories about demon possession. I feel like I've personally met someone who's demon possessed. I'm not going to go into it on the podcast. I'll talk about it in real life, but I don't necessarily want to talk about it on the podcast. But I feel like that's super real. Like that is so real, and it's not something that Hollywood should dull our minds to. And so,
yeah, I agree.
Anyway, I think it is. So that's Angels and Demons.
Do we have guardian angels?
Oh, man. I think God can send an angel to help you, but I don't know that you have an angel assigned to
that's
you.
That's like watching over you.
Yeah, I don't know that's true. I think that might be made up.
Now, the Screwtape Letters would disagree, but
I don't really care what the Screwtape Letters think.
C.S. Lewis, great guy.
He knows a lot.
Okay. Well, yeah, that is Angels and Demons. I don't know what we're talking about next week.
I think it's humanity. the nature of humanity.
Okay. Does it deal with sin, or is it just...
That's the next week. It's total depravity is next week.
Okay.
Human sinfulness. Okay. They kind of overlap together.
A little bit.
But I think when you start getting into depravity, it's like, okay, so we know that humans have this issue, but let's talk about that issue.
Right.
And, but this week, I get to study the person of Christ. Thank the Lord.
You do. You do.
Man.
So, but that's Angels and Demons.
Yeah. So, we talked incredibly too long about this, but... It's just the way that it is.
It was a long, long episode. So, we're for the word, for the truth, and for the church. Thanks again for listening to the Pastor and Intern podcast.